The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Though the entire meeting was colored by several moments of lighthearted jokes, the leaders discussed serious matters like climate change, migration, and the protection of human rights, according to a Vatican statement. After his meeting with the Pope, President Biden met with other Vatican officials, including Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin and the Secretary for Relations with States, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher. In a communique, the White House reported that the parties discussed efforts to rally global support for vaccinating the developing world against COVID-19, and that the president thanked the Vatican for speaking out on behalf of the wrongfully detained, including in Venezuela and Cuba. According to Biden, they did not discuss abortion, and the Pope told him he was happy that he is a good Catholic and that he should continue to receive communion.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, let me just say pray, pray, pray. All right, let's just pray, pray, pray. Wow. A lot to talk about. We're going to go to Ed Condon coming up in a moment. Here's an expert on this. If you follow them on the Pillar, you might have already read about some of the exchange here. But big news today, I think one of the big stories today, and we can get away from, what's happening on Capitol Hill and how progressives and Democrats are carping at one another and what this is going to mean. I mean, that story is not going away. But when a world leader like the president of the United States meets the leader of the Roman Catholic Church, the leader of billions of Catholics, right? It's big news. When the Vicar of Christ meets the president, what happened? We know that the meeting was scheduled. The president arrived in Rome. He's actually going over there for the G20 summit. But before that, he and his wife, Jill, they stopped for an audience with the Pope, arrived around noon Rome time, stayed with Pope Francis for about, they say, an hour and 15 minutes. 75 minutes, that's a long time, an hour and 15 minutes or so. So it's not a record. It's certainly close to one. National leaders usually spend about half an hour, maybe 45 minutes with the Pope. When he met Barack Obama, I don't know if you remember that exchange, they hung out just a little less than an hour, about 52 minutes. For Trump, about a half an hour. So 75 minutes, is a considerable amount of time. They gave each other gifts. They exchanged gifts. Biden gave the Pope a commander coin. And after they exchanged these gifts, Biden had one more gift that he felt compelled to give the Pope. Listen to this. All right, Maggie will be getting that audio for you. We'll share some of that exchange. According to the Vatican, though, as has been reported by a number of outlets, Crux in particular, I saw this at, the two held very cordial discussions on really a myriad of different issues, including the environment. We knew they'd be discussing that. The fight against COVID-19, this whole pandemic. Assistance for migrants and refugees, as well as protection of human rights, including, the freedom of religion and conscience. All important issues. And of course, they spoke about some matters regarding the current international situation. The G20 summit, as I said, is taking place this weekend. And they talked about promotion of world peace through political negotiations. So 75 minutes can get eaten up pretty quick. The Vatican also said that there was no discussion of abortion or other pro-life issues. I'll just be honest with you. I'm a little surprised on that one. I'm just surprised. As I often say to you, and I do this on a daily basis when I cover these news. I mean, I pray every day for the president. And I pray every day for a Pope. I pray for our country. I pray for our enemies. I pray for the leader of China and North Korea and Iran and Pakistan and so many other places. Let's pray for them. This to me is the preeminent issue of the day. Of course, we know that the Pope's position on it has been pretty clear. He's come out many, many times and has said, look, he equates abortion to that of a hitman, hiring a hitman to solve a problem. And clearly, he has come out and said it's murder. I know a lot of people sometimes give him a hard time on that situation, but I wish more was said. It wasn't, and maybe there was a reason for that. It's right now above my pay grade, so maybe for peace, maybe for unity, maybe for the case of these other issues, the dialogue has been down. But as I said, Ed Condon will give us some perspective on it coming up. According to President Biden, this was reported in the Associated Press, here's what he said. He says, look, we just talked about the fact that He was happy that I was a good Catholic and that I should keep receiving communion. You know, of course, there's not going to be any confirmation on that from Rome. Maggie, do you have that audio? You do? You said you had that? All right, let's play that. Is this Joe Biden actually making that statement?
Yes, this was right after the president's meeting with the Pope, and now he's meeting with the Italian prime minister. They're in a very large space out. I don't know if it's outside or not, but so it was very echoey audio. So I tried to clean it up a little bit, but right. A reporter kind of fires some of those questions at him, and you can kind of hear his response. Yeah.
Mr. President, did the issue of abortion come up at all?
No, it didn't. It came up. We just talked about the fact that we were happy that we were Catholic and keep receiving communion.
You said that you should keep receiving communion.
Yes.
All right. So we'll see. Look, this is a big story. You're going to hear a lot more. As Maggie pointed out, the audio there was a little bit difficult to hear. Just before the two of them met, there was a document that was released here in the United States, and it has been in large part ignored by the press. I discussed this morning with my producing team. It was written by Cardinal Raymond Burke, and its title's pretty blunt, to be honest with you. And I'll just share with you what the title is. It says, Catholic Politicians and Non-Admittance to Holy Communion, end of quote. So that's the title, Catholic Politicians and Non-Admittance to Holy Communion. In it, he reflects back on what happened in 2014. Remember when another potential Catholic president was running? He didn't win. I thought if he ran under a Catholic principle, he probably would have done pretty well. That was John Kerry. He was running for president. And all the controversy that surfaced at the time, the then Archbishop of St. Louis, it all got stirred up because when Kerry's campaign went to his, archdiocese, the question was, would he or would he not be able to receive communion? And that stirred up contention with the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he recounts what happened there. I mean, he points out in this piece that bishops today, need to apply Canon 915 to Catholic politicians who support abortions. Cardinal Burke, then Archbishop Burke, did not allow them to receive communion. That's tough. We've talked about this a lot on the air here, haven't we? I mean, we've had Archbishop Cordiglione from San Francisco on. We've dealt with this issue around election cycles a lot, and it's an important one. I think this is going to. I look down the road and around the bend. I think this is the issue that's looming. This is what you're going to hear a lot about in 2022, 2023, especially 2024. And our bishops are underway right now with a campaign which will launch, and they're going to try to revitalize. Belief, respect for the integrity, the beauty, the true presence of our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. There's going to be a Eucharistic revival underway. And this discussion here, I'm telling you now, it's going to be a big part of it. It's going to be a very big part of it. I'm joined today by Ed Condon. He's the co-founder of a new Catholic news site out there. We've talked about it in the past. I hope you've checked it out. If you haven't, it's not too late. You can go to The Pillar. The website for that is actually pillarcatholic.com, pillarcatholic.com. And it's good to have Ed with me today. He's his works appeared everything from the Washington Post to the Wall Street Journal to the National Review and the Spectator. And he's a very gifted canon lawyer who's been with us in the past. Good to have you back, Ed. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
So big news today, huh? This is great. The Holy Father meets the second Catholic president. And, they don't discuss the Eucharist, of course. They do discuss a lot of other things. The secular media are playing up President Biden's statement that the Pope said that he's a good Catholic and that he should keep receiving communion. I'd love your thoughts on that. I know you've been diving into this. How accurate do you think the president is being?
I think with any politician making a public statement, you can generally allow a certain amount of wiggle room and interpretation for their presentation of events. I think in this case, trying to summarize a 75-minute conversation in a sentence and a half, which is what the president did, I think it's fair to say that that's his lasting impression and takeaway of the conversation. Although, you know, we don't know, and I strongly doubt we ever will know exactly what was said between him and the Pope. It's not the Vatican's way to comment on these things and go into private conversations. You know, it's funny. I think that the Holy See actually saw something of this coming, and were trying to mitigate it. Yesterday, the Vatican press office said they weren't actually going to allow reporters and live cameras in the room for the traditional exchange of gifts and sort of handshake and meet and greet, which is, you know, normally they have a full press room for that part before the Pope sits down with a world leader and they talk in private. They didn't even want the press in there for that. They just, you know, released pool photos and sort of the Vatican's own digest of how that all went, which, I mean, for my money, I think points to the fact that, you know, they knew there was going to be a lot of media speculation and interest in what the Pope and the president talked about, particularly to do with the president's own Catholicism and everything. And they probably didn't want to get in a situation where they had a room full of reporters shouting questions at people and tried to head that off. But of course, you can't stop the president from talking to reporters when he wants to and comes out the other end.
I guess it speaks volumes as to the awareness that Rome actually has regarding, you know, President Biden and his Catholicism and the controversy that is often brought up over here regarding how good of a Catholic he is, his ardent support of abortion. I mean, clearly he has promised to throw the weight of the federal government against the state of Texas for their heartbeat bill. We know how he has reversed the Mexico City policy, all the things he has done to advance the culture of death. So when I heard yesterday they were going to give a sanitized version of the exchange, you know, it did speak volumes. And I thought, they must know what's going on. I know there have been reports that abortion and life, those issues, they weren't raised at all in the meeting. The Holy Father's been clear on this. I think it's important to get this out because there's going to be a lot of Catholics who are confused and angry even as to why the Holy Father didn't try to fraternally correct or discuss this with Joe Biden, who's wayward and his soul is really what hangs in the balance here. The Holy Father, as I pointed out, has called abortion murder. He called the abortionist a hitman that you hire to take care of the problem. What do you make of it? What's your take on why this was not discussed? I mean, maybe it was pointless. Maybe other issues were more important. I mean, how do you read that? What's your takeaway, your sense?
Well, if it wasn't discussed at all, and as you say, that seems to be what the Vatican are saying, then I personally read it as kind of almost a diss against the president, because it would seem to suggest that they were treating this very much just as a meeting with a head of state, and they were only going to talk about the things that they felt they could be constructive about. You know, previous popes and previous presidents, abortions always come up. JP2 was very eager to mention it in meetings with presidents, Republican and Democrat, as I recall. So if they didn't raise it at all, I guess the only thing I can think is that the Pope thought, well, this isn't going to be, there's no constructive room for conversation here, so we'll talk about the things that we can talk about. You know, as you said, Pope Francis is by no means vague in his opinions on abortion. He's also compared it to Nazi eugenics. You know, he's about as stridently anti-abortion as it's possible to be. Only last week he had a meeting with healthcare workers where he, you know, was wagging his finger at them saying it's never licit to be complicit in abortion. You can't do this, and called the right of healthcare workers, the kinds of rights of healthcare workers not to participate in abortion procedures and things, a non-negotiable one. And these are exactly the kind of religious freedom rights which have been attacked pretty aggressively by the Biden administration since they came in. So the policy level disagreements on abortion between the Pope and the president are, you know, they're not a mystery to anyone who actually is familiar with what the Pope said, even in the last few weeks. So why he wouldn't raise it in the room with the president? Again, I can only assume it's kind of a recognition that, well, we're here for some international diplomacy, and we're just going to focus on that.
Yeah, of course, personally, I wish it was brought up, but of course it wasn't. And I think your insight there, I think, is makes a good case for perhaps that's exactly what went down. There were other issues that were discussed, and it wasn't like it was a short meeting. I mean, 75 minutes was significant. I'm curious as to what you see coming. Will this meeting between the Pope and the president, will it have any impact or influence on the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops meeting next month, which, of course, will address this issue of worthy reception of the Eucharist? What are your thoughts?
I think it's definitely going to loom very, very large. I think going to be impossible to read anything anywhere about the USCCB meeting in the next few weeks that won't mention Biden's account of, you know, the Pope praising him for being a quote-unquote good Catholic and telling him to continue receiving communion. You know, again, we don't actually know what the Pope said or how that exchange took place. But I think you can safely bet that's going to be the thing that frames all discussion of this going into the meeting in Baltimore in November. I, to be honest with you, I don't think it's going to affect very much what comes out. It's never been my expectation that the document on Eucharistic coherence, which they'll be debating, you know, they have a draft now, as I understand it, and they're going to be debating and finalizing and voting on in Baltimore. It's never been my expectation or understanding that it would address either the president by name or what to do about Catholic pro-abortion politicians as their own class. I don't think that was ever likely to be included in the draft text. I think it's absolutely not going to be included now. But I think what we will see is this this story is going to inform the floor debate a bit. I think you would normally expect to see several bishops from the floor say, well, look, we could be a little more pointed here. We could be a little more explicit. We could be a little clearer about what the church's teaching says on these matters, probably in line with some of the stuff you mentioned, Cardinal Burke's letter, which he, I think, released either this morning or late last night. But I think you're likely to see those voices be pretty muted and few and far between in Baltimore, because anyone who gets up and says that from the floor is likely to be challenged and said, well, the Pope has apparently said this. Now, I mean, again, we don't know what the Pope has said. You know, it's certainly possible the Pope could have said something rather different or rather more open to interpretation, and that was the president's takeaway. You know, the Pope Francis has been in recent weeks in his papal press conference coming home from Slovakia. He was very clear about the situation of Catholic politicians who support legal abortion. In fact, he pretty much said in terms that they were excommunicated, was what he said. But he was also very clear, said, you know, you don't publicly name and shame politicians. You don't discipline them in public, that you have to be a pastor to them first and foremost. And it's the job of the pastor of these politicians to handle them. So I wouldn't have much difficulty in imagining an exchange where President Biden said, well, I've been going to Mass and taking communion and doing what my bishop, my local bishop, Cardinal Gregory, tells me to do, or my local pastor in my parish tells me to do. Right. Is that all right? And the Pope saying, yes, carry on doing whatever they tell you to do, because that is the Pope's line on these things, is that this is the responsibility of local pastors. I mean, it's worth noting also that, you know, you mentioned Cardinal Burke's recent text. His reflections on being a bishop in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and also in St. Louis, Missouri, he mentioned several occasions where he had to meet with politicians and admonish them on their stance on abortion and their unsuitability to receive communion. But he was very clear in that text that he never made that public and never would consider making it public or naming politicians that he was talking to in this way, because it would be inappropriate. So I think there are a lot of people who would like to see a sort of public calling out of the president by a senior church figure, be it the Pope or a bishop. But, you know, anyone from Pope Francis to Cardinal Burke seems pretty clear that's not how you do it.
Right. Now, do you think Cardinal Burke's letter, which he published on the eve of this meeting, was coincidental or was the timing intentional? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's obviously only Cardinal Burke can answer that question, but I would be surprised if it was timed to coincide with the Pope's meeting with President Biden. At least as I read the text, it seemed pretty clear that the Cardinal had it in mind to write something like this ahead of the USCCB meeting next month. He'd had it in mind for a while, but of course he's been recovering from coronavirus. He had a very nasty bout of it, as I understand it. So I'm not sure how tied to the daily news cycle Cardinal Burke's reflections and writings are. I'd be surprised to learn that they were that deliberately timed, but I suppose it's possible.
I think that's fair. You know, just back to the USCCB and their reading, this is something that is dividing a lot of Catholics. They're questioning the Pope. They're dividing, you know, they're wondering about a president who professes to be Catholic and yet very publicly dissents from teaching, especially when it comes to something as clear and as fundamental as life. You know, I know we're going to have this campaign that'll be launching, and over the next couple years, we're going to have this initiative to revitalize, you know, respect and devotion for the Eucharist. I would think this has got to be a key issue that, as because we have midterms and then we've got the generals coming up on the heels of that in terms of the elections. Do you think that this will be addressed? There'll be some clear document that all bishops can stand on in the future, or do you think it'll remain? I mean, because the canons are pretty clear. We talk about Canon 9:15 and 16 and what it says, but what do you think is going to come out of this? Do you think that this is the time that we're going to see that clarity?
Well, I don't know. I think the USCCB have been as clear as it's humanly possible to be in the past. I mean, they have a document called Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, which they release and update periodically to help Catholics sort of make their decisions in the voting booth. And they renewed that shortly before the last presidential election. In that, they underscored again that ending the monstrosity of legal abortion is the preeminent social concern in the United States. You know, they come up with documents every couple of years on, for example, the Eucharist. They have said things in the past on, you know, suitability to receive communion and states of grave sin and things. Mm-hmm. It's been my experience that the USCCB produces a lot of documents which are fairly clear, but people don't tend to put much stock in them once they've been published. The attention really goes into the making of the sausage and less so the eating of it. You know, in the, you know, when we're talking about what we can expect next ahead of near election cycles, I think surely the bishops will continue to speak out, some of them more vociferously than others on the subject of abortion. But, you know, one of the things that's occurred to me is the sort of national prominence of the Biden question, I think, has risen in large part because the bishops aren't all seen to be always in lockstep on how big a priority ending legal abortion is. Yeah. And I just wonder if the U.S. bishops individually, not sort of in an anonymous conference document, but, you know, individual faces and names, if all the U.S. bishops were speaking as clearly about the evil of abortion as Pope Francis does, you know, if every U.S. bishop and archbishop and cardinal was saying the same language of Pope Francis about this is the equivalent of assassination, this is the equivalent of Nazi eugenics, this is always homicide, this is always the ending of a human life. If the U.S. bishops were individually as clear on abortion as the Pope is, I wonder if we would feel like the Biden question was so ambiguous.
Yeah, Ed, I only have a moment or two left. And first of all, I want to thank you for your clarity and your eloquence on the issue. We'll continue to follow this story because it's one that I don't think it's going to go away. And it's one that's important for us as Catholics and Americans. Your website, The Pillar, I want to put a quick plug in. I appreciate your writing. I know you were writing on the meeting of the Holy Father today as well. PillarCatholic.com. What will people find and how will they get connected to you? What's the best way to become a member?
Well, PillarCatholic.com, we've got hopefully subscribe buttons pretty up there. Our work is freely available, but what we always say is, unfortunately, we can't make it for free. So we encourage people to subscribe whenever they feel they can. We do follow, you know, the events of the day. We have been writing on it, but really the stuff that we pride ourselves on is the longer form things. We've been doing a lot of hard data analysis of demographic trends in the church in the U.S. around, you know, diocesan restructuring, Catholic populations, parish closures, things like that. We've got a major poll of American Catholics that we put in the field that we're just getting the results back in now, so we've got that coming in the next few weeks. We really pride ourselves on doing the sort of big picture stuff that you can only do if you sit down out of the daily news cycle every once in a while.
Well, we're grateful for your journalism, and I'm especially grateful for your time and your contribution here today. Enjoy your weekend, Ed. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Ed Condon. You can check out The Pillar. It's PillarCatholic.com. Check it out. I'll be back with more right after this. If you want to join me, phones are always open. It's 888-914-9149. Still have a lot to get into, so stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It's a framework that will create millions of jobs, grow the economy, invest in our nation and our people, turn the climate crisis into an opportunity and put us on a path not only to compete, but to win the economic competition for the 21st century against China and every other major country in the world. It's fiscally responsible. It's fully paid for. 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics have said it will lower the inflationary pressures on the economy. And over the next 10 years, it will not add to the deficit at all. It will actually reduce the deficit, according to economists.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That, of course, was our president's comments yesterday, rolling out the new infrastructure package. I found those comments to be thought-provoking is the word I want to use. You know, we've had some people giving an analysis on that the other day, and they come away with a little bit different. I really hope the president's right. It'd be great, wouldn't it? Gosh, it'd be so good to find that these things will help deflate the inflation that we are now encountering, that it'll help America to grow, to be robust, and to be strong. Like, I am not an enemy of the president by any means. I pray to God he's so successful. And I hope you're praying for him, and I hope you're praying for his health. But sometimes some of these things you just scratch your head on, too, and you're saying, really? This is free? And it just reminds me of, you know, that Marxist socialist mentality, you know, where you can spend other people's money. Nothing is free. That money comes from somewhere. You just don't print it. You know, it comes from someplace, and there's a cost for it. Yesterday, the government came out with new data showing the gross domestic product, that's the GDP, rose only 2% in the last quarter. Okay, that's well below what economists, they expected. They thought it would be like 2.8%, almost 3%. But the supply chain issues, they're having an impact, as I'm sure you are feeling, you know. We have 10 million open jobs in this country right now. 10 million. And, you know, some experts are saying supply chain issues, the job openings, that's the driving force behind this economic slowdown. I've heard the White House come out and say, oh, it's because people are buying more through the pandemic. They got accustomed to going ahead and purchasing things online, and that's why we're having the problem. That's not true. Inflation rose 4.4% just over the last year. Gas and food leading the way. I know it's costing you a little bit more money to put gas in your car now. In fact, gas prices are as high as they've been in 7 years. And walking out of a store, I mean, how much it costs you for one bag of groceries? My wife and I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago where, you know, you reflect back and you used to walk out of the store with X amount of bags. Oh, that was a $20 bag, or, you know, on average it's $10 or $50 or whatever it is for you. I mean, how much is it costing you on average right now to get out of the store? Less products and more money. San Francisco, my heart goes out to you. I understand your gas prices are just under $5 now. And I don't mean to laugh at that. I just find it awkward. I mean, $4.75 a gallon, with some stations charging up to $5.19 a gallon. That's a lot of money. You know, five and some change. And there are experts that are saying that those prices are probably going to go higher. Consumer spending, it went up 0.6% last month, but the data is showing that consumers are dipping into savings in order to make those purchases. So, you know, it's a strange economic mix. And consumer confidence, it's not that strong. According to a recent University of Michigan poll that I saw, it's not strong because inflation is a key factor. So I've invited today to join us Peter Grandage, the former Wall Street whiz kid. You know him. I hope you'll check him out online at petergrandage.com. I get his emails. I think you'll find them enlightening if you ever want to sign up. Peter Grandage and Company is the name of his organization there, and he provides guidance on matters of finance through that organization. But the website, petergrandage.com. I thought we'd get a quick take on what's happening in the economy. And then, you know, I know you might be going through a difficult time personally and financially as well. I mean, Peter's got a great story to share. He really does. You may never have heard it before. I thought it might be nice to just give you a little bit of hope, because, you know, God can bring us through these dark and these very difficult times. Peter, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon, Drew. Glad to be here as always.
Oh, always good to talk to you. It really is. Let's talk a little economics first, and then I do want you to share some of your story today, because I think it can help people. I think as the economy gets hard, as people are losing jobs, as, you know, the debt is rising, their savings are diminishing, it's sometimes hard to have hope. But you've been through some dark times, and you've risen above them, and I know you got some great advice and insight to share. But first, let's talk economy. the president claiming that his plan will, and according to 17 experts, you know, this multi-trillion tax and spend bill, he says we'll be able to get inflation tamed. I hope he's right. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. I'm not the economist. You understand this much more intimately than I do. What do you make of inflation right now and the president's steps? Is it going to hurt or help that?
I have to answer you completely candid. While you were playing that audio, I visioned him saying it and one hand holding a bottle of snake oil. I mean, it's preposterous to anybody that truly understands what really makes up economies and all to hear him make those claims that it doesn't cost us anything. They put out to literally say that the reason we have shortages is that people are buying too much, when everybody that knows or is in business is suffering two big problems. Labor, the ability to service across a wide spectrum of industries, and parts and things in order to perform their businesses and services, whatever it may be, hardware, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not like it's just we're missing truck drivers, and so if we can just get more truck guys to go to the boat and pick it up and deliver, we're all fine. It's across the board, and part of it is not just his fault. It is something that's been going on for several presidencies, and that is we went to a what would be easy to describe as a just-in-time inventory system. We used to have, when we were much younger, Drew, there were a lot of middle people. There were distributors. So there was always product made ahead with hoping that there'd be demand for it. When we got into this world economy and all, we got into basically getting rid of the middle person and just-in-time delivery. And we made it by also depending it on sources out of our control, more in China than anywhere else in the world. And China is no friend, never has been. I don't think it's their plan ever to be. Whether they want to be an enemy and to be at war, that's another story for another day. So the things, some of the faults go long before Biden arrived. What's happened is their mentality and their inability to function as the majority party at a crucial times is added to the flame and basically taken away the curtain. And people now see what has been behind the curtain, and they're realizing that it's more than just a simplicity, or as he likes to say, we have a framework. By the way, the last time I remember, framework and deal aren't the same thing. And we're continuing to see that despite the Democrats supposedly having the majority, the inability to get across. Despite now, I don't know, we created 40 or 50% of all the dollars ever made in the last 18 months. And yet they want to say that, well, we don't have to worry about inflation. You can't create all this money. I've told you this, Drew, for a long time. You can't put trillions and trillions of dollars of new money out there and not expect the cost to come with it. I've always argued the biggest cost is the debt is going to crush us. But before the debt crushes us, we get inflation. And we've been so used to disinflation, we have a generation of financial advisors. Over half of them have only been in the business since the last financial crisis. They don't even know what inflation is, so how they can speak about it is beyond me. I just entered this business when we were coming off the highest levels of inflation that this country has ever seen. I remember what people thought about and were concerned about, and we're seeing a return to that. And this time, we don't have to go back to 10 or 12% inflation to cause issues because we went so low and had interest rates so low, it's only going to take maybe half or less than that to really knock the economy for a loop. And that's what I think we're seeing. And so whether or not the framework turns into a deal, whether it's $2 trillion or $4 trillion or $5 trillion, again, I'll go back to you, it's a whole host of problems socially, politically, and economically that have made me so deathly afraid, even today. And I'm not here to, you know, I never come on to talk about stocks and all, but something that I have been very high on, where a lot of people have made a lot of money in a particular sector, I've told them today it's time to take profit because we got to have more cash because I'm even more petrified of where we're going. We're going down a very bad road. It's not any one party that's all guilty, and it's not just this administration, but it's a sum total of the way we've been for a lot of years, socially, politically, and economically, and somehow people think that you never pay a price for it. But there is always a price paid for it, and now I think we've entered that time frame.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the months ahead. I pray to God, Peter, as I say quite often, that you're wrong and the president's right. But
I've heard 100 times in the last several weeks from friends and followers, Pete, I believe you're right, but I'm praying to God you're wrong. And I said, I hope I'm wrong, too, for all our sakes. But my job is not to just be wrong. Yeah. My job is to say what I think I feel and what the God has placed on my heart, and this is what he's placed on my heart.
Yeah, and here's the thing from a spiritual perspective. I mean, nobody knows the future. We do not know whether things are going to improve or get worse. They may get very dark. I don't know. But God is always with us through these times, and we're not to lose hope. When you hear conversations like this sometimes, people can get very anxious, very nervous, very stressed out, very fearful about the future. You're a guy who made millions of dollars and who lost millions of dollars and made millions of dollars. You've been through this. You've had a radical conversion from worshiping at the altar of the God of Mammon to Christianity, to Jesus Christ. And you've got a great, great story to share. I don't know if everybody knows part of your background, but there are lessons in your life, I think, that people can really benefit from and can be applied to the perhaps trials, the struggles, the depression, the problems that may be facing or looming before them in the not too distant future. Maybe you can, you know, share some of those with us, maybe bring us back and share for those who do not know your story a little bit about it.
Sure. So I guess the best way is I can tell you 65 years in less than 5 minutes, and then you can digress from that on any particular areas that you'd like to get more involved in. Born to a non-practicing Catholic father who was Italian and Croatian, to a non-practicing Jewish mom who was English, Russian, and Jewish. Only baptized as a child, but the second of two children. My mother had thoughts of raising me Jewish. My father said no. So after being baptized as a baby, I never saw anything religious, never saw a church, never saw a book about God until I would meet my future wife, who was born and raised in Ireland, and obviously a devout Catholic. And in order to get married in Ireland, I had to become Catholic. So I went through, you know, my first confession, which was 2 hours, and then confirmation and all. And I became a warehouse manager in my early 20s. And I took a small amount of money, turned it into a fairly large sum, only to lose it through a stockbroker, a penny stockbroker. And I started an investors club. I was discovered there. A gentleman convinced me to become a stockbroker. I was a stockbroker for about 3 months in 1984 and wanted to quit because I couldn't cold call. First person had hung up, I was done. So I started a newsletter. By 1987, I was head of investment strategy for a New York Stock Exchange member firm and forecast a crash. The crash wasn't the news. It was the fact that the firm wanted me to retract it or resign, which I didn't. And then the day after the crash, which we just celebrated the 34th anniversary just a couple days ago, I said everything was going to be honky-dory in 2 years, and it was. And that elevated me to a very large national level. By the mid-1990s, I was managing four hedge funds, a mutual fund that bared my name. I was also turning the Ten Commandments into the Ten Suggestions, and I was a legend in my own mind. By the end of the millennium, I had lost most of what I made because I made huge bets in a market that I became so-called an expert in gold. And gold prices collapsed. I collapsed with it, and I suffered the first of two very bad, debilitating bouts of depression. It was only then when I got serious about my faith, I was more of a seeing Catholic, Christmas and Easter while my wife was devout, I would meet a gentleman who became a Catholic lay evangelist, but I would also meet a man that changed the way I looked at finance, and before long I found myself at a Fellowship of Christian Athletes meeting, and that would meet a man there who played on the New York Giants' first two Super Bowl team, even though I was a diehard Jet fan, and I told him when he said God had sent him for me to come partners with him, I said, God couldn't have possibly sent you, Lee, because I used to root for you to drop the ball and die. And so the millennium starts. I go back into the gold market. I also become very involved in Christian and Catholic sports ministries. I start to work with the New York Giants, doing Bible study and chapel, and at the same time become very involved in the metals and mining and also my faith. 2008 comes along right after the Giants win the Super Bowl. I suffer the second and far worse bout of depression. I'm actually hospitalized, and I had a lost will to live. I didn't actually go to commit suicide, but I was actually thinking of it quite hard. And there, things happen. It's in my book. It's too long of a story, but people tell you about, you know, people appearing and saying things and doing things that could only be led by God. That's what happened to me. And it was really the freeing of a chain. And like you said, you can't serve God and money. I was trying to serve both of them through that period of time.
Yeah.
And while riches came, riches went. And realistically, after that point, I spent the rest of the time up till now focusing more and more on the teachings that God gives us through the Manual of Life, the Holy Bible, and our church teachings, and built a business around that, both to the athletes that I dealt with and the general public. It's not a door opener. More people don't want to hear that, especially as time goes on, because more people are moving away from religion and so forth than were 10 or 20 years ago. But for me, in the peace that has come from it, I can tell your listeners, no matter where they are in their life, it is very, very true. You can't serve both. You have to make a decision whether you're going to serve God or Mammoth. You cannot serve Mammoth and then try to. And one other thing, and then I'll just quiet, and whatever you want to ask me, I'll answer, Drew, is you and I have talked about this before, and this is the best advice I will ever give on Relevant Radio or anywhere. And Catholics don't do it very well as a group. You must tithe. Tithing is an absolute critical way, and you need to read Malachi to understand why it's important. It's the only place in the Bible where God really challenges us to, in a sense, be a supporter of our faith financially. And tithing doesn't always have to be if you're struggling in dollars. It can be through sweat equity as well. But
Peter,
tithing
hold the thought. Let me do this, Peter. Hold the thought, because we're up against a break here. When we come back, I want you to expand on it. I think it's such a critical spiritual point here, especially it's linked to finances, and it's so hard for so many people really to do. But it's the way God wired things, and I think we're often blessed when we give. I know we can never outgive God. Come back. We'll talk more. If you want to join me, I only have Peter for a few moments. Now's your time to call in. 888-914-9149. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Connect with Drew on the Relevant Radio app.
Up in just a few moments to pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. So it's a great opportunity for you to get in today. And I always want to encourage you to just invite one other person. Maybe it's somebody you work with. Maybe it's a family member or a friend. You know, my wife and I, we are in a nine-day novena with another couple, they're friends of ours. And we call each other at night, and we've been praying, leading up to, All Souls Day and this novena that we started together. We've done this several times. It's nice to pick up the phone and say, hey, why don't you join me in prayer? And you can do that in the chaplet. So just if there's a struggle, a need, whatever it might be, and maybe it's a legal case you're facing, or maybe it's a family problem or something in the business, get everybody together. They can listen on the station you're listening to. If they're in another part of the country, they can always stream us at relevantradio.com or use the mobile app. And that is a must app to have in your cell phone. It's filled with prayers and archives and podcasts and lots of great stuff. So relevantradio.com or try us on the app, okay? My guest today is Peter Grandage, and I hope you'll check him out too. PeterGrandage.com is his website. He's the former Wall Street Whiz Kid. He was sharing with us a little bit of his story, and He left off by mentioning one spiritual principle that everyone should do. It is scriptural. And anybody who has put this into practice, anybody who has really believed what the Lord has said, they will testify to the fruit of it. I've never met a person who has not sincerely put their trust in God and began to tithe, began to give back to God. As Peter said, sometimes you can't give that 10%. I mean, economically, you may not be able to do it, but there's other ways. He mentioned sweat equity. There's lots of ways to give back. There's time, there's talent, there's treasure. Peter, let's pick up on that point. I didn't want to cut you off there, but we had a break we had to get out to. Let's pick up on tithing. I mean, the person saying, Drew, I can barely put food on my table. How can I tithe? What do you say to that person, Peter, and how do you address that?
Well, you know, again, for those parties, there's still things that they could go. They can help within a church. They can help at a food bank. There's a lot of sweat equity things that ends up serving others, which God calls us to do. But for those who still have finances that can afford it, I always like to say to people, you know, you're willing to give that maitre d' some extra money in order to get a good seat. You're willing to donate to a political or a politician to hopefully get, but you're not willing to give some to God, who's realistically, right, your very next breath is all because of his grace. It doesn't make any sense. And I always told people, just read Malachi. I mean, is he a liar? He says in Malachi, it's simple. I put things into simple terms. Listen, trust me, help bring some into my house, and it comes back tenfold. And you're absolutely right. Every single person, many who heard me say it 10 or 15 years ago and got around to doing it, say, Pete, come back, you were right. Things just change. Now, it doesn't mean you get suddenly rich. It's not this Christian prosperity or the Joel Osteen type stuff. That's not what we're talking about, okay? We're talking about a meaningful, like, if I may, and you have no idea or anybody in Relevant is going to say this, but how many people here that are listening right now, listen to Relevant Radio all the time, have gotten tremendous value from it, but how many have actually gone out and tried to help support it? If you're not one of those, that's a place to start. And those are the type of things that we're called to do. And it's not big dollars. It's not you take everything you have and that type of stuff. But we're called to do that. And tithing just seems to be, whenever I'm around a Protestant brother, and they seem to be more willing to discuss it and do it. And we need to get into and understand that, especially during tough times. It's easy. I heard your guest before. I'm not thrilled about Biden and receiving and communion and all that. I like to turn off and say, no, I don't want to give there and I don't want to give there. But that's not God's teaching. Right, and his teaching is tithing. And it's critical. And I find most people don't do it. Yeah. And then yet they can't understand why other things aren't working out.
Peter, I'm with you on that. You know, what I found is that when I give, I always get back somehow. It's not always temporal. You know, it's not always dollar for dollar. Sometimes I've given and I've seen those dollars multiplied. You know, the Lord has multiplied in ways that are unbelievable. But God gives unexpected blessings. I mean, God is a God of surprises, and I've seen it so many times in my life. Sometimes it's that answered prayer, it's a new opportunity. Sometimes it is the financial blessing, the unexpected blessing that comes your way. And I love this principle, because what's at the heart of tithing? It's trust. It's trust that what you have has come from God, and what you give is just a fraction of what God has already given to you, and that the Lord will never let you down. And I hope people will take advantage of it. Let me grab a call or two, because we have a moment or two left. We'll go to Eagle River, Wisconsin. Lloyd's been waiting for a while to get in on the conversation, too. Lloyd, good afternoon.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Peter, keep on doing what you're doing. You're blessing more than what you can realize.
Thank you.
I've been in cash for a long time, and I started putting stuff back in because I listened to you, and I just about got paranoid when you were not going to give any more advice. But why I called is I do a lot of volunteering up here, and there's a lot of elderly up here because it's a retirement community. I had a lady just break down crying yesterday. They were business owners at one time, and they're running out of money. Her husband dies, and I see this a lot up here where the spouse passes away 10, 15 years down the road after they lose his Social Security. And the economy can't keep up the inflation, they start running out of money. And I'm sending them to the food bank, and I got on a committee with ADRC, and I'm trying to get them help with their rent and whatever, but the bomb didn't even go off yet, and these people are just in dire need right now already.
Yeah, well, my wife and I have taken on a local food bank to be a major supporter, and one of the things that I'm hearing from a group of food bank people that got together is the people that are now showing up, not only has it the numbers increase, but it's way up the level of income. It's not just, unfortunately, the poor and lost souls and all. It's literally working class people that just because of everything that's happened are struggling. And that's where those of us, for whatever reasons, were blessed and are not at that point. Those are some of the places like you have to go and where we can do our tithing by supporting it. And again, not necessarily in dollars, but in just time and sweat equity. And so I praise you and thank you. Know, I'm sure God is thanking you for the work that you're doing for these people. And unfortunately, that's the circumstance that's been under the rug that has not been seen, as you know, this craziness of printing trillions and trillions of dollars, and nobody thinks there's a price to pay for it. And that's why I'm so overly concerned about the general equity market too, that it's living in a world completely different than what 90% or so people have to live in.
My guest today, Peter Grandes. Peter, thank you for being here. I am really grateful for all that you do. We'll catch up again, and your timing couldn't have been more perfect. I know we didn't talk before the show, but next week we do have a Relevant Radio pledge drive. It's the last one of the entire year. And if you heard Peter, maybe think about what you can give next week when I come to you. And you always make my day when I make the request, and you come through in wonderful ways. So thank you for your generosity. Peter, you'll be in our prayers. We're about to pray the chapel. I'll remember your needs, okay?
All right, my friend. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you. That's Peter Grandage. Check him out, petergrandage.com. That's his website, too. If you enjoy all the things that Peter's got to say, you'll love it there. Let's pray the chapel when we return. I just got a news alert that there's a judge that blocks the Biden administration from firing unvaccinated employees with pending religious exemptions. That's big news. I'll be back. Let's pray.